So today being the appearance day of Sri Brahmadev, we're also going to read something about his appearance. But we did want to start off with the Bhagavatam verse for today because it's such an ecstatic purport. So I know it's not on the board here, so what I'll do is Well, if you don't mind. Otherwise, acha. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. It was such an ecstatic purport. It was hard not to want to comment on it, but we'll have adequate time for glorification of Lord Varahadev. So we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 10, entitled Deliverance of the Yamal Arjun Trees, text number 9. Anyante pashavo yatra nirayair ajitatmabihi manyamanar imang deham ajaramrityunashvaram. Anyante pashavo yatra nidaya rajitatmabihi manyamana rimang deham ajaramrityunashvaram. Anyante pashavo yatra nidaya rajitatmabihi manyamanarimang deham ajaramrityunashvaram. Please chant. Nidaya rajatatmabihi manyamanarimang deham ajaramrityunashvaram. Anyante pashavo yatra nidaya rajitatmabihi manyamanam deham. Ladies. Anyante pashavo yatra nidaya rajitatmabihi manyamanarimang deham ajaramrityunashvaram. Anyante are killed in many ways, especially by slaughterhouses. Pashava, four-legged animals, horses, sheep, cows, hogs, etc. Yatra, wherein, niradayai, by those merciless persons who are conducted by the mode of passion. Ajita atmabhi, rascals who are unable to control the senses. Manyamanai, are thinking, imam, this, deham, body, ajara, will never become old or diseased, amrityu, death will never come, nashvaram, although the body is destined to be annihilated. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. unable to control their senses. Rascals who are falsely proud of their riches or their birth in aristocratic families are so cruel that to maintain their perishable bodies, which they think will never grow old or die, they kill poor animals without mercy. Sometimes they kill animals merely to enjoy an excursion. Please repeat. Unable to control their senses. Rascals who are falsely proud of their riches or their birth in aristocratic families are so cruel that to maintain their perishable bodies, which they think will never grow old or die, they kill poor animals without mercy. Sometimes they kill animals merely to enjoy an excursion. Purport. When the modes of passion and ignorance increase in human society, giving rise to unnecessary economic development, the result is that people become involved with wine, women, and gambling. Then, being mad, they maintain big slaughterhouses or occasionally go on pleasure excursions to kill animals, forgetting that however one may try to maintain the body is subject to birth, death, old age, and disease. Such foolish rascals engage in sinful activities one after another. Being Duskritis, they completely forget the existence of the Supreme Controller who is sitting within the core of everyone's heart. That Supreme Controller is observing every bit of one's activity, and he rewards or punishes everyone by giving one a suitable body made by material nature. In this way, sinful persons automatically receive punishment in different types of bodies. The root cause of this punishment is that when one unnecessarily accumulates wealth, one becomes more and more degraded, not knowing that his wealth will be finished with his next birth. Nasaru manye yad atmanoyam ashanapi kleshara ashadeha. Bhagavatam 5.5.4. Animal killing is prohibited. Every living being, of course, has to eat something. Jiva jiva sajivanam. But one should be taught what kind of food one should eat or should take. Therefore, the Ishopanishad instructs, tena tyaktena bhunjitaha. One should eat whatever is allotted for human beings. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 9.26, patram pushvam palam toyam. Yomi bhakti prayachati taraham bhakti uparitam asnami prayatatmanaha. If one offers me with love and devotion a leaf, a flower, food, or water, I will accept it. A devotee, therefore, does not eat anything that would require slaughterhouses of poor animals. Rather, devotees take prasad of Krishna. Tena taktena bhunjitaha. Krishna recommends that one give him patram pushvam palam toyam. A leaf, a flower, fruit, or water. Animal food is never recommended for human beings. Instead, a human being is recommended to take prasad, remnants of food left by Krishna. Dagdya shishlashtana shanto munchante sarvakil vishayi. Bhagavad Gita 3.13. If one practices eating prasad, even if there is some little sinful activity involved, one becomes free from the results of sinful acts. O migana timirandasya gyananjana shalakya chakshunanitam jena tasmai sivaravimma. Kumuro divachalam pangam langayate girim yadkipidam hambande sigurum dina taharanam. One line that just struck me in reading this purport was Srila Prabhupada says, animal food is never recommended for human beings. Unfortunately, we're living in a world where sometimes people have to eat dog food. We're so fallen, so unfortunate, isn't it? People, sometimes they have to resort to eating animal food, dog food, right out of the can. It's such a sad or unfortunate condition in the world. So here, Srila Prabhupada is very nicely commenting on Sri Narada's statement of how accumulation of a wealth is too much wealth is not a good idea, especially for those who are fallen. Srila Prabhupada has commented how, and it's also recommended in the Vedic literatures, that Shudras particularly should not be given too much wealth because of their ignorance. Because what do they end up doing with it? And we see it practically. There's so many famous people out there who can jump up and down and run real fast in circles and may be able to lift something, and people give them millions of dollars. But because they're sudras, what do they end up doing with it? Very shortly, it doesn't take long, they engage in all sorts of sinful, crazy things. Caught for prostitution, hunting, or they end up abusing someone, or they end up, including their spouses, or they do some other crazy thing. Invest their money even in stupid industries. So it's not recommended that such persons be given wealth. Unfortunately, this state of society is such that people are mad after it, as Srila Prabhupada points out here, which is very much in line with today's memorable appearance of Lord Varaha, because he had to deal with such a mad person as Hiranyaksha. He was totally mad, and we'll hear about that, discuss that a little bit later. It's really nectar. But here, Srila Prabhupada starts out by explaining that when the modes of passion and ignorance increase in human society, gives rise to unnecessary economic development, and it's a fact, we see it. When people are get really worked up, and they want to they push economic development and quote unquote progress in the name of progress, will start this kind of industry or that kind of industry, or will deregulate this industry and that industry, as we're seeing now in the present fallen condition of America. Now, I'm not just picking on America, it's everywhere. But because of that unnecessary economic development, people become, the general mass of people are involved in more and more sinful activities. They're more and more encouraged that engage enthusiastically in this development, because if you do, then you can enjoy wine, women, and what is it? Slaughterhouses. You can have all the wine, women, and meat that you can handle. And more than enough, we'll spread it to the poor, less fortunate persons as well. We'll sponsor turkey dinners and give them and advertise and promote and be so proud that we've handed out 10,000 dead animals on such and such day. It's a total it's madness. So Srila Prabhupada makes that point here. Then being mad, nunam pramato kuru devi karma. We've heard this verse many times. It's so applicable. Nunam pramato kuru devi karma. Yarindira pritaya pranoti. People are just mad after sense gratification, and as a result, they maintain big slaughterhouses and occasionally go on pleasure excursions to kill poor animals. Right? They pay thousands of dollars to go and kill some animal that's in a preserve and happens to cross the line. You bait them to go across the line, and then you kill them. And you're a famous hunter, and you're proud of it. You take a picture of you with the head of the animal after you slaughtered it.
with a machine gun. You're such a great hunter. It's ludicrous. It's like it's total madness. And people are proud of it. Forgetting that however one may try to maintain the body is subject to birth, death, old age, and disease. No matter how you look at it, or what, how you try and stack up the cards, eventually you have the reality is that it's birth, death, old age, and disease. It has to be given up. You can't hold on to it, as Srila Prabhupada explains here. Kamat vikanyena shariravhanda. Their minds are so colored over by fruit of activity, they don't understand that that fruit of activity means you have to accept another material body. Forgetting. One may try to maintain the body as Srila Prabhupada points out here, such foolish rascals engage in sinful activities one after another. Not knowing that actually Krishna is there with an art and he's witnessing everything they do. He's a witness. Right? Paramatmeti chapyukto deisim purushakpara. The Lord is there in the heart and he's witnessing everything. It's not that we can hide someplace in the corner in the jungles or in some back room, turn off the lights, no one knows. No. The Lord knows everything that's going on, and he's, as Srila Prabhupada very nicely points out, Ishvak Sarvahutan, he's directing the wanderings of all living beings. Oh, your desire is to engage in such and such activity? Okay, I'll give you full facility. The Lord is so kind. He's impartial. If instead you want to engage in my devotional service, then Krishna gives you the intelligence. But if you want to engage in these sinful activities, okay, very good. I'll give you a good intelligence. You can become an expert butcher. You can become an expert a sense enjoyer. You can become an expert cheater. And we see it all around us that there are so many expert materialists, and they're so eager to and willing to do anything to get their rewards, their gratification. The root cause of this punishment, because there has to be some punishment, it's not that you can do whatever you like and get away with it. No. There has to be some punishment. The root cause of this punishment is that when one unnecessarily accumulates wealth, one becomes more and more degraded, not knowing that his wealth will be finished with his next birth. Therefore, Prahlad says, I don't think it's very, it's not very good. Tat saru mane suryavari dehinam. Right? No. Nasaru mane yatma atmano yam. Yeah, I don't think it's befitting an intelligent man to engage in such activities and again involve himself in activities which again mean that you have to get another material body. It's not very intelligent. Although they like to pose themselves as a supremely intelligent people. And again, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu were such personalities. They were trying to is described in the Bhagavatam how when they would walk, everyone would the earth would tremble, and everyone would just scatter as soon as they came in. And we see that in the smallest way by some puny people in the world nowadays. When they walk around, they want to exhibit their power, and they may have some position, and they expect everyone to just sort of grovel and always when they smile, you smile, and when they frown, you frown. it's just hilarious. It's actually
it's not funny that it's we're not laughing because it's necessarily funny, but it's just so mad that all you can do is laugh. It's better than crying. Because so many people are crying, unfortunately. So many people are having to cry. They've been crying for years and they'll be crying more in the coming days. You can be sure of that. Animal killing is prohibited. Every living being, of course, has to eat. That's for sure. Jiva sajiva jivanam. That there's one food that is meant for another living being. That's fine. But one should only take that which is allotted to him. And Srila Prabhupada very nicely quotes this nice verse, Ishavasya idam sarvam. Tena tiktena bunjita magrita kasya siddhanam. That everyone has everything animate or inanimate belongs and is owned and controlled by the Supreme Lord. And one should only accept those things necessary for his livelihood. And not those things which, knowing well to whom they belong. We only take what is necessary. That is the life of the devotee, of the spiritualist. Therefore, the Lord gives us a very nice instruction in the Bhagavad Gita, what should be taken, what should be eaten, and by following those guidelines, society advances. There's a very curious statement here that Prabhupada makes right at the very end. His last line is that if one practices eating prasad, even if there is some little sinful activity involved, one becomes free from the results of sinful acts. Even if there's some shortcoming on our part, sometimes in the offering, sometimes in the preparing, and sometimes even in the execution of sacrifice, there may be some shortcoming. But the process is so purifying. The process is so purifying, and this can be applied to chanting as well. Even though there may be some shortcoming on our part, the process is so purifying, whether it's taking prasadam, or whether it's hearing, or whether it's chanting. It's so purifying that eventually, gradually, one becomes freed from the results of sinful acts. And we can see it practically. So many persons have become purified by taking prasadam. They're totally unqualified in any way, but by prasadam distribution, they become purified. And so many unqualified persons have become purified by chanting and engaging in the processes, the different processes of devotional life. I just couldn't help but want to say something about this verse. It was such a wonderful purport and instruction given by Narada Muni. So if there's no questions, we can move on to reading something about Lord Varahadev. Any questions or comments? So, the pastime, everyone's heard this pastime many a time, so we'll just sort of condense it a bit. But the pastime begins by Srila Prabhupada explains how Lord Brahma was engaged in the process of creation. And during that process of creation, by some arrangement of the Lord, the earth fell into the Garbhadak ocean. And he was speaking with Manu, his son. They were discussing how to populate and manage the universe. And Manu, noticing this, asked that Lord Brahma do something. The earth has fallen. So as they were discussing this and how to address this, all of a sudden, a small boar is described. A small form of a boar came out of his nostril. The measurement of the creature was not more than the upper portion of a thumb. And while Brahma was observing him, the boar gradually grew larger and larger. And within a moment, it was a gigantic size. And although Lord Brahma had never experienced such a thing, he could, by his intelligence, deduce that this must be Vishnu. Along with his sons, as they were deliberating this thought, this wonderful form of the Lord began to roar. And Srila Prabhupada points out here that it appears that great hills and mountains also have their roaring power, because they are also living entities. Because the description is that the Lord, he roared tumultuously like a great mountain. And so while Brahma and his sons were guessing about the appearance of the Lord, this form of the Lord made this wonderful, fantastic sound, which was very encouraging to the devotees, but it was very threatening to the demons. And as the Lord was producing this wonderful sound, the sages and devotees began to offer wonderful prayers. And Srila Prabhupada comments that as the devotees, as these great saints and sages were offering their wonderful prayers, the Lord was playing like an elephant. He was entering into the water, and he would sporting, knowing that and understanding that these devotees' prayers were meant for him. Srila Prabhupada comments in one of the purports that the Lord has no material form, but his form is always understood in terms of the Vedas. The Vedas are said to be the breath of the Lord, and that breath was inhaled by Brahma, the original student of the Vedas. The breathing from the nostril of Brahma caused the appearance of Lord Boar, and therefore the Boar incarnation of the Lord is the personified Vedas. The glorification of the incarnation by the sages on the higher planets consisted of factual Vedic hymns. The sages in the higher planets, the upper, I think it was three, Tapa, Jhana, and one of the other lokas, regions, they were able to witness this form of the Lord in his appearance. Those in the lower planets were not, because this was during a devastation, they weren't able to witness this, but those in the upper planets were able to witness all of this, and in this way they were offering wonderful prayers to the Lord. He roared once more and entered the water to rescue the submerged earth. Before entering the water to rescue the earth, Lord Boar flew in the sky, slashing his tail, his hard hairs quivering. His very glance was luminous, and he scattered the clouds in the sky with his hooves and his glittering white tusks. He was personally the Supreme Lord Vishnu and was therefore transcendental. Yet because he had the body of a hog, he searched after the earth by smell. His tusks were fearful, and he glanced over the devotee brahmanas engaged in offering prayers. Thus he entered the water. It's a very, very nice purport here. Srila Prabhupada writes, "We should always remember that although the body of a hog is material, the hog form of the Lord was not materially contaminated. It is not possible for an earthly hog to assume a gigantic form spreading throughout the sky, beginning from Satyaloka. His body is always transcendental in all circumstances. Therefore, the assumption of the form of a boar is only his pastime. His body is all Vedas, or transcendental. But since he had assumed the form of a boar, he began to search out the earth by smelling, just like a hog. The Lord can perfectly play the part of any living entity. The gigantic feature of the boar was certainly very fearful for all non-devotees. But to the pure devotees of the Lord, he was not at all fearful. On the contrary, he was so pleasingly glancing upon his devotees that all of them felt transcendental happiness." So after this, the Lord dived into and penetrating the waters of the Garbhadak Ocean, creating a tumultuous scene. But it's described how the Lord very easily took the earth on his tusks and got it out of the water. And as he was coming out of the water, simultaneously there's an encounter with this Hiranyaksha. And in a chapter in the part two of the third canto, there's a very nice description of this exchange between Lord Varaha and Hiranyaksha. We all know, we've heard how the two gatekeepers, Jai and Vijay, were cursed by the Kumaras to take birth as Jai and Vijay. And how when they appeared, when they took birth, there were all sorts of inauspicious happenings. I guess we could read a couple of the things that were going on during that time. On the birth of the two demons, there were many natural disturbances. All were very fearful and wonderful in the heavenly planets, the earthly planets, and in between them. There were earthquakes along the mountains on the earth. Many inauspicious planets like Saturn appeared with, along with comets, meteors, and thunderbolts. There blew winds which were most uninviting to the touch, hissing again and again and uprooting gigantic trees. They had storms for their armies and clouds of dust for their ensigns. The luminaries in the heavens were screened by masses of clouds in which lightning sometimes flashed as though laughing. Darkness reigned everywhere, and nothing could be seen. The ocean with its high waves wailed aloud as if stricken with sorrow, and there was commotion among the creatures inhabiting the ocean. The rivers and lakes were also agitated, and lotuses withered. Misty halos appeared around the sun and moon during solar and lunar eclipses again and again. Claps of thunder were heard even without clouds, and sounds like that of rattling chariots emerged from mountain caves. In the interior of the villages, she-jackals yelled portentously. vomiting strong fire from their mouths, and jackals and owls also joined him with their cries. The asses ran hither and thither in herds, striking the earth with their hard hooves and wildly braying. Cows, terrified, yielded blood in place of milk. Clouds rained pus, and images of the gods in the temple shed tears. And trees fell down without a blast of wind. So this description goes on and on. There's so many verses here. But basically, we can understand these were two bad dudes that appeared. They were quite terrible. The younger brother, Hiranyaksha, is described as always ready to satisfy his elder brother by his activities. So Hiranyaksha would take his club on his shoulder and travel throughout the universe with a fighting spirit, ready to satisfy his brother Hiranyakashipu. And on one occasion, he went into the ocean, and he went to the abode of Varuna, which is described as Vibhavari. And there he sarcastically spoke with Varuna, falling at his feet like a low-born man. And to make fun of him, he said with a smile, "Give me battle, O Supreme Lord. You are the guardian of an entire sphere and a ruler of wide fame, having crushed the might of arrogant and conceited warriors and having conquered all the Daityas and Danavas in the world. You once performed the Rajasuya sacrifice to the Lord." So in this way, he was mocking Varuna. His vanity knew no bounds. As arrogant as he was, Varuna was just as controlled. And he said in response that "You are so skilled in war that I do not see anyone else but the most ancient person, Lord Vishnu, who can give satisfaction in battle to you. Therefore, O chief of the Asuras, approach him whom even heroes like you mention with praise." Varuna continued, "On reaching him, you will be rid of your pride at once and will lie down on the field of battle, surrounded by dogs, for eternal sleep. It is in order to exterminate wicked fellows like you and to show his grace to the virtuous that he assumes his various incarnations like Varaha." So when Hiranyaksha heard this, he was quite enlivened that, okay, here's someone that I can do battle with. He was looking very much forward to this. So as the Lord was ascending from the Garbhadak ocean, Hiranyaksha was descending, and he addresses the Lord by saying, "O best of the demigods, dressed in the form of a boar, just hear me. This earth is entrusted to us, the inhabitants of the lower regions, and you cannot take it from my presence and not be hurt by me. You rascal, you have been nourished by our enemies to kill us, and you have killed some demons by remaining invisible." Because the Lord entered within the heart, right? "O fool, your power is only mystic, so today I shall enliven my kinsmen by killing you." The demon continued, "When you fall dead with your skull smashed by the mace hurled by my arms, the demigods and sages who offer you oblations and sacrifice and devotional service will also automatically cease to exist, like trees without roots." This is their out of ignorance, these demons. They think that by doing away with God, then just like Kamsa, he was the same mentality, that all of the worshipers will also be done away with. Although the Lord was pained by the shaftful, abusive words of the demons, he bore the pain. But seeing that the earth on the ends of his tusks was frightened, he rose out of the water just as an elephant emerges with its female companion when assailed by an alligator. So, as the pastime goes, the Lord set the earth down and began to battle with Hiranyaksha, who was quite massive himself. And he was adorned with all sorts of ornaments and bangles, and he began to chase the Lord from behind with a great mace. And the Lord, Srila Prabhupada points out here, tolerated his piercing ill words, but in order to reply to him, he expressed his terrible anger by responding and saying, "You are creatures of the jungle," or I'm sorry, "We are creatures of the jungle, and we are searching after hunting dogs like you. One who is freed from the entanglement of birth has no fear from the loose talk in which you are indulging, for you are bound up by the laws of death." Purport. This is a really interesting purport. Demons and atheistic persons can go on insulting the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but they forget that they are subjected to the laws of birth and death. They think that simply by decrying the existence of the Supreme Lord or defying his stringent laws of nature, one can be freed from the clutches of birth and death. In Bhagavad Gita, it is said that simply by understanding the transcendental nature of God, one can go back home, back to Godhead. But demons and atheistic persons do not try to understand the nature of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, they remain in the entanglement of birth and death. So, as the pastime continues, they began to fight. And hissing indignantly, all his senses shaken by wrath at hearing this response, the demon quickly sprang upon the Lord and dealt him a blow with his powerful mace. The Lord, however, by moving slightly aside, dodged the violent mace blow aimed at his breast by the enemy, just as an accomplished yogi would elude death. The Personality of God had now exhibited his anger and rushed to meet the demon, who bit his lip in rage, took up his mace again, and began to repeatedly brandish it about. Then with his mace, the Lord struck the enemy on the right of his brow. But since the demon was expert in fighting, O gentle Vidura, he protected himself by a maneuver of his own mace. You can just see that. It was quite an interesting battle. In this way, the demon Hiranyaksha and the Lord, the Personality of God, had struck each other with their huge maces, each enraged and seeking his own victory. There was keen rivalry between the two combatants. Both had sustained injuries on their bodies from the blows of each other's pointed maces, and each grew more and more enraged at the smell of blood on his person. In their eagerness to win, they performed maneuvers of various kinds, and their contest looked like an encounter between two forceful bulls for the sake of a cow. O descendant Kuru, Brahma, the most independent demigod of the universe, accompanied by his followers, came to see the terrible fight. And his response to it was that, why are you playing with this person? Just finish this. They were quite astounded. This demon has proved to be a constant pinprick to the demigods. Since he has attained a boon from me, he has become a demon, always searching for a proper combatant, wandering all over the universe for this infamous purpose. My dear Lord, there's no need to play with this serpentine demon, who is always very skilled in conjuring tricks and is arrogant, self-sufficient, and most wicked. So Lord Brahma goes on to implore the Lord, "You can kill him by your internal potency without a doubt. Just finish this character. My Lord, the darkest evening which covers the world is fast approaching." So his point was that time was getting dark, and during the evening hours, these demoniac forces, they increase, finish this person before it comes to that point. After hearing the words of Brahma, the Creator, which is free from all sinful purposes and as sweet as nectar, the Lord heartily laughed and accepted his prayer with a glance laden with love. Struck by the demon's mace, however, the Lord's mace slipped, because as he was contemplating this, the demon again hit the Lord. The Lord's mace slipped from his hand and looked splendid as it fell down whirling. This was miraculous, for the mace was blazing wonderfully. Even though the demon had an excellent opportunity to strike his unarmed foe without obstruction, he respected the law of single combat, thereby kindling the fury of the Supreme Lord. You can just see his impunity. As the Lord's mace fell to the ground and a cry of alarm arose from the witnessing crowds of gods and rishis, the personality of God had acknowledged the demon's love of righteousness and therefore invoked his Sudarshan disc. And at this point, the Lord sent this disc. And while the enemy looked on, the Lord in his boar form, the enjoyer of all sacrificial offerings, playfully knocked down the mace with his left foot, even as it came upon him with the force of a tempest. The Lord then said, "Take up your weapon and again try, eager as you are to conquer me." Challenged in these words, the demon aimed his mace at the Lord and once more loudly roared. When the Lord saw the mace flying toward him, he stood firmly there. He caught it with the ease of Garuda, catching a little serpent. His valor frustrated, the demon felt humiliated and was put out of countenance. He was reluctant to take back the mace when it was offered by the personality of Godhead. He now took up a trident. So, again, he throws this trident at the Lord, and the Lord easily destroys it with his Sudarshan Chakra. The demon, again, enraged, advanced toward the Lord with his hard fists. Hit the Lord's chest. And then, the next moment, he disappeared. He started conjuring all kinds of tricks. At the sight of this, all of the onlookers were again struck with wonder. How is this happening? And finally, the demon, seeing that none of his tricks were working, again began to strike the Lord with his hard fists. But the Lord slapped him in the root of his ear. And being thus struck indifferently by the Lord, the conqueror of all, the demon's body began to wheel. His eyeballs bulged out of their sockets. His arms and legs broken, and the hair on his head scattered, he fell down dead like a gigantic tree uprooted by the wind. And shortly after this, the Lord assumed again his bluish hue and entered back into his heavenly abode. Shiva Raha Deva Ki Jaya.